This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Assist.
Yeah, it's a failure of the hobby, of the industry. It's relegated now to, you know, model railroad status on hobbies. It's embarrassing.
All right. I don't know where he's going with this, but anyhow.
He's going nowhere, so I'm going to start the show. All right.
That's how we'll start the show. It's mono railroad status. Get your indie books.
Welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 358. Guess what? This is our 30th episode with this new crew at the helm.
Wait, I thought it was our 358th episode.
I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Whirlwind X Kevin, and Phil from Canada, and the L.A. Rabbit, who's somewhere in Toledo. No. Fights under the name Kid Cincinnati.
I'm still claiming ownership of all those episodes. I've been here since the beginning. No one can prove differently, unless they have those old episodes. But I doubt they even have them on iTunes anymore.
Although this is the podcast that's sponsored by nobody, it is part of the Deliberate Noise Network, as is Marvel Noise, the other show that we do, and that's all run by Derek Coward, whose voice you hear on the introductory warning.
I love that warning. Even though I think I am somewhat easily offended, I still listen. It's my contrary nature. He tells me not to listen. You don't tell me not to listen. And I decide if I listen.
The show here is basically bi-weekly, with Marvel Noise happening on the off weeks, but at any time, either podcast can kind of affect the other's schedule, and that's kind of, it's been about almost 3 weeks now here since the last one, but it really actually wasn't Marvel Noise's fault as much as it was my fault, because I had crazy other things going on, including doing that Cub Scout dinner for my kiddo's graduation with his friends, where it was comic book themed, and I had Ron Mars come and sign some books and talk to the kids and stuff, because he's a local and he's that kind of guy who would do such a thing. So that was kind of cool, but it took like all my attention for a while. I made like a free comic book day event out of it for the kids and stuff, which was neat, but now I went back and read some indie comics, so ready to talk about them with you guys.
That's very cool of him. When I was a little kid, I had no idea that people made those things. It's kind of just like they just magically were on the spinner rack at the drugstore, you know?
It was cool. He had, like, process pages of, like, showing the script to the pencils, to the inks, and, you know, asking the kids what he thinks the little X in spots in the areas were, and had them all guessing for, like, spotting the blacks and stuff. It was cute. And
Does he work full script, or...?
Yeah, well, pretty much, but then artists have the, depending on who he's working with, has the ability to switch things around. Then he does a second pass and that kind of thing. But he also writes for the Skylanders video game and the comic book there, so the kids are all about that, so they were pretty excited. Yeah.
Kids, yeah, I love that right now.
Big time.
I like how Phil weighs in. Phil, are you the arbiter of what kids are into now?
He knows what's hot.
I know. My age, everyone I know has kids, so you learn a bit.
He's a big kid. What indie comics have you been reading, guys? Let's go around the horn, as it were.
I finally got myself some PAX. You guys get a home country.
Oh, you did?
Woo-hoo. Yeah, because the first issue went up on Comixology, so I'm like, oh, I finally get to hear this thing the Rabbit's been talking about.
What'd you think?
Thought it was enjoyable. You know, you get into this shattered world, and people are like, what's going on? What's happened? We got to figure this out. And then people get shot and killed, and then you're just like, oh, that's kind of strange.
I do like your plot. So that's kind of strange. Well, in those post-apopsicle worlds, people are always getting shot. That's
true. This is true. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but, you know.
But it had superpowers in it.
Yeah, where did that come from? Like, wait a second. Unexpected, to say the least.
Well, if you had listened to my review, it wouldn't have been quite as unexpected, but I dig where you're coming from. I mean, I would have thought the packs of the Low Country might have, but I guess a pack could be a pack of people, too.
Well, I guess the cover isn't just some, like, theoretical or whatever thing. Like, when a tree turns into a giant mouth, that's about to eat a person that's falling down. Like, that might be a hint that some crazy stuff is going to be coming your way. But not necessarily superpowered, I guess.
Could be metaphorical.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be symbolic of don't go into the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, I picked it up too since the first issue. I haven't checked it out yet, but I had checked little bits of it out on the website in the past when the rabbits brought it up. So it would be good to read it sequentially.
The rabbit. Sounds mysterious.
It does make me sound weird. How I ended up with this weird moniker for... I'm saddled with it.
Oh, I don't know. Could it be because your Skype picture's a rabbit?
And you post pictures of rabbits all the time? I got saddled with this Whirlwind one, but that's my own fault.
Well, Whirlwind seems more comic book related. I mean, there are bunny-related comics. I'm always buying them, so...
Nice. I read a digital comic recently that was made for digital, even though it's by a creator who has been around the block a few times. This is from Asylum Press, and it is The Mad Mummy by Mike Vosburgh. And Mike has a bunch of stuff that is indie work that he has up for sale now digitally through Comixology. He's got the Linda Lovelace stuff. He's got the Retro Wood crime noir stuff. But this, I think, is his first made for digital. It's like a landscape book and everything. And I got to say, it's almost a perfect issue, at least given what the subject matter and the situation is. But by the time the reader is let in on who the narrator is that you've been reading in the caption boxes as you're going through the first bunch of sequences, I was like already hooked and then even more delighted once I found that out. It was a cool reveal. The deal is that there's this high priest, Aten-Ra, and he got screwed over in ancient Egypt, and he's like cursed to wander around the world for eternity as a mummy, but not with like bandages. He's kind of like a green-toned, leather-skinned old dude, and he's living in the Hollywood Hills of LA. So he's got like a Don Ho shirt and a hat, and he wears Prokeds and stuff. And there's this like hot priestess on the other side of town that he doesn't know she's around, and she keeps talking about this horrible, dangerous mummy guy who has to get put down. But when we see him in action and interacting with people, he seems like a pretty okay dude. He, like, wants to keep to himself. He just bought this house, and he's moving in. He's nice enough to neighbors when he's confronted by them. He takes in and feeds a mangy old cat. And even by the end of the first issue, he foils a kidnapping scheme that was set up to actually frame him. Damn that priestess. And then the next issue teases that, like, we'll learn more of his past and his relationship to the priestess and how he got screwed over and whatnot. But really well done, and Vosburgh still got the touch. He's still got a good hand, and the storytelling is, veteran storytelling. It's really well told, and it was just whimsical enough and interesting enough that I am looking forward to the next installment. It suggested in 60 days it would be back, so if they're going to try for a bi-monthly schedule, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I remember the Laurie Lovecraft. Didn't I send one of those to Phil?
Yeah, what did I say?
Yes.
I said Linda Lovelace. Yeah. Laurie Lovecraft.
The rock and roll Cthulhu fighter.
Yeah. You remember that, Phil, right?
Yep.
I saw Mike in Baltimore last year, and I was talking to him saying, I dig your stuff. And I said, I've been reading the Retrowood stuff online through Comixology digitally. And he's like, oh, he was really excited to hear that and was saying that he really gets zero feedback of, like, you know, what was selling that way and if people were digging it or whatnot through that channel. So maybe now that he's doing a purely digital comic, he's more invested in that mode of distribution and checking it out. But it's great to see the stuff backlit, and it looks like it's shot right from his pencils. If not, it's lightly inked. Really nice.
Well, you'd be a fool in this current climate to be not taking advantage of that, especially on the indie front. I mean, it's just that's how you're going to get access to distribution. You're not saddled with an enormous print bill and the shipping and handling and all that stuff that goes with it. I just don't know how you can be competitive unless you already have a pretty big fan base and a distribution system set up. So as much as I'm not a fan of digital, you got to be there, you know?
And it's a great little niche, too. It's like he goes with the modern horror-ish take. You know, it's like it's not a zombie, but it's a mummy, you know? And the fact that he's in Hollywood lets him, you know, comment on some of the ridiculousness of life out there by you, Rabbit. You know, through this mummy's eyes, who's literally seen it all, right? And just kind of is trying to get through his day and not be bothered. It's cool. You should check it out. Phil, did you do your homework?
Yes. It's time for my new segment, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Uh-oh. Steve, you didn't let me down. You added a soundbite there. So first up, The Good. Invincible came out today, and it was hard to tell, but it was only 25 cents. So you cannot
Canadian
pass up
American?
On that's American. So if you see it in the comic shop, pick it up. It's a quality story for 25 cents, and I know you guys haven't read Invincible, I don't think, eh?
I have up to 100, and then
oh,
I've,
really?
Then I've been buying them, and I'm going to read another chunk at some point. But
okay.
Yeah, I binge read over like 3 weeks. I read the whole series just the year before last for the first time after not ever having read any of it. And I totally dug it, totally loved
yeah.
it.
And the quality stays the same all the way through up to this. This is issue 118, so you're not far behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I have the first trade, but I never got into it. I tried to start reading it, and I just faded. But maybe I'll need to redouble my efforts.
Yeah, for sure. And it's cheap. The Robert Kirkman stuff collected in like the big 50 issue runs or whatever, it's pretty cheap. And next is The Bad, Bill and Ted's Most Triumphant Return by IDW. Do not get this comic. If you thought the way they talk in the movies was bad,
written, I don't know that there was a big risk for some of us, but
written on paper, it's even worse. I don't know what's wrong with me. These stupid comics coming out like that are like sequels to the movies and stuff we used to like when we were young. I keep buying them and I don't know why.
You love it.
And then The Ugly, The Fly Outbreak by IDW. The reason why this is ugly is because the art.
Uh-oh.
As you know, I think I mentioned before, I hate when people make up these stupid made-up fucking names. Like the guy who does the art here is called Menton 3. What the hell does that mean? Like,
superheroes
the number three.
Made up names.
It's not written three. It's the number three. And if you're going to have a made-up name like that, your art better be good. And his is not at all. But basically, do you guys know The Fly at all? It started off in...
The movie? Vincent Price.
Well,
the superhero guy.
The Red Circle character.
Well, the Red Circle character, that's actually my favorite comic when I was a kid, the Jack Kirby one. I do want to talk about that sometime on a show. It basically The Fly started off in 1958 in Playboy magazine as a short story. Then in that same year, I believe, or the next year, they made a movie and then two more. And then Cronenberg came out with his two remakes. And this one takes place after the Cronenberg one. So it's the son, which I believe, if I remember correctly, in the second movie, he cured himself.
Oh, so this is the help me, Fly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's okay. What I was saying. The help me, help me. Although it's not really the help me if it's based on the Cronenberg one.
No, no. Because that was the original, the old one.
That was the Vincent Price one.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that guy was in a lot of good movies.
And that holds up. Mm-hmm. The first Fly movie, the original, holds up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like Vincent Price, man. Last
Man
ever.
I love Vincent Price, yeah. And, yeah, so this is called Outbreak because basically, I guess eventually, like, people are getting affected in this first issue. But the thing is, if you haven't seen the second movie, this comic's going to be useless to you. I saw the second movie like 25 years ago, so I don't really remember what the hell really happened. But,
but I don't blame you. I have trouble remembering movies I saw last week.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there you go.
All right, I'm looking forward to your review of Reanimator and X-Files and any other of these.
I won't be doing X-Files, that's for sure. Reanimator I have.
What a great movie.
They staged a musical version of it out here.
Well, they had an opera.
Going, But they had a splash zone, and I was like, I don't think I want to be covered. My days of going to the Guar show are over. I don't need to be covered in fake viscera.
They actually did an opera of the fly, like a serious opera.
Help me, help me.
Like a bad Simpsons number, or a Mel Brooks number, even better. All right, Andrew, what are you reading out there?
Well, I thought if it's not too much of fabulous Phil, I'm going to drag him back in for our worship of Mr. Faber.
I believe Kevin also read it.
Oh, I read this too. Did you?
And that is his latest effort, Secret Identities.
But he's only co-writing it, though, I believe.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Credits are Jay Faber, who I've verbally gone on and on about plenty, and Brian Jones are the story, the interior art and regular cover, Ilias Kyriazis, Kyriazis, colors by Charlie Kirchhoff, and letters by Ed Dukeshire. And there was a four-color Grails variant cover by Mahmoud Azra, who we all know, and Ron Reilly.
I think this was a setup, though. Like, the first panel, it says downtown Toronto. I'm like, come on, guys. Downtown Toronto in the first panel? That's awesome.
It's about time other places than America get superheroes. Like, when you think of it in the superhero world, America should be destroyed, because that's where all the trouble comes from.
It's like when you see an alien invasion happen in Africa or something. You're like, wow, original. Because so much stuff happens in America.
Hey, look, Marvel's blown up Australia a few times. But Dan. Here we have our creative team is creating a team of superheroes. And I just got to say, what I love about Faber from his past experience, and this creative team does the same, is they just can write these team superhero books. And they know the language and the conventions. And you just slip right in to be like, but it feels different, but they're using all the conventions. So they set up everybody's backstory super quickly. And it's just fun to be in that world of, like, really dense storytelling with a lot going on and a lot of characters, and they're all their conflicting stories. I mean, come on, they open the opening fight against Alan Moore. Oh, I mean, sorry, against a mage with a big beard.
That's what I find too. Like, sometimes when comics with new characters come out, a big cast, it's hard to get into them. But this one, I had no trouble at all right from the second page.
Yeah, I find, like, it's kind of like the Invincible shortcut, where it's like, you know, you've seen Snake bad guys before. Guess what we're riffing on here? So it's, you know,
and I liked how
something of the genre, then, like, you can just fill in some of the details.
I liked how, too, the big secret was given away from the front cover, like, on. Like, they're, like, they kind of gave
words?
You. Yeah, like, in other comics, usually they would lead you on for a couple issues, but I like how in this one it would just came out right away from the, because it's right on the front cover, you know?
I've also had a lot of experience in the, it feels like, you know, the noble cause is vain. Mm-hmm. Like, he just knows how to set up the characters. They're all going to have their own secrets. They're all going to be allies, yet appositional. There's going to be some betrayals. There's going to be everything. And the art team, super clear storytelling. I'm not, some of the stylistic choices for the face portrayal aren't up my alley aesthetically, but I can't really fault it. That's just, you know, you like a certain thing or you don't. But from what it's supposed to do, which is communicate the story in an interesting way, it does. I just, you know, I don't know what the influence, what would you say the art style is on this?
Well, always. It's for me, it's almost like Invincible. Like, this is how Otley, like, that kind of art.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hate to use word as bad language as, like, soft or whatever, but it just is a little, I don't know, a little edge. I mean, maybe I was artificially set up with Copperhead, where the art is so stunning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it draws inevitable comparisons in my brain. But it's got a huge cast of characters that it keeps fairly clear and distinguishing. Because, you know, you also got to see all their backstories and everything. It does a great job with that.
Did you notice how the character Gaijin, the girl with the swords there, how she changed color every once in a while?
As does, it seemed like, the speedster also.
Yeah. Oh, him? I didn't notice. Okay.
I couldn't quite tell, but it's just a fun... The other thing I like, as you boys know, is the storytelling decisions were mostly panel-heavy, which I am all about nowadays. I mean, there's... I don't know that there's an entire spot... There's a... Like, it opens... The big scene is kind of a double page, but even then, there's panels at the bottom. So, like I said, it just feels like a ton of... Even most... Like, it ends on a splash, because you have the big reveal. But there's a bunch of, like... Even normally, if it's a splash, it's going to be little panels in it. And they're just going all in all. And the team also communicates a lot of backstory information with an economy of line that I like. Mm-hmm. Like... And in less experienced hands, this could be a very wordy issue. But it feels like it's not. He communicates the backstory in a minimal of dialogue and setup.
And what about their base?
Yeah, they have a cool base.
Something really cool happens with it in the second issue.
Yeah, so basically their base is a this giant robot. Amazing.
Like this gutted out robot missing half of its head, gutted out rotted stomach. Like, just this giant robot in a frozen pose in the water. Like, it's awesome. Why it was attacking Canada, I do not know.
And as the boys pointed out, you have a couple of spots in Canada, you have one in America. So it's really trying to push around and not just, hey, we're all just going to be based. Because it goes to New York, it goes to Rochester. I mean, it's definitely, well, except for that Halifax reference in San Diego, it keeps mostly... To that kind of northeast area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Have you boys been to Halifax?
No. did it seem like Canada where you put off? You're like, oh, this is taking place in Canada.
Well, a lot of it takes place in the first issue, right where we go to our convention, Kevin.
I know. That's that area. And the CN Tower is almost always in the background, which is just like Toronto.
No, it's only two panels. I kept an eye out for it.
So did you guys feel, I should be asking you, did it feel like Canada? It felt like Canada.
Well, I mean, yeah, because like I say, like the splash page, like it looked like where we go to the convention because I had the CN Tower in the background. Like, I don't know, it felt like Toronto to me.
I mean, I've been to Toronto, but I'm no expert on it. I think I've only been a few times. So you boys are the Canada experts.
And I like how they said, too, they're not a Canadian team because the Americans are trying to get them to become an American team. Like, have their base there.
Yeah, because the president's daughter is a member of the...
Yeah, but she's like, no, we're for the world or whatever. So we're going to stay in Canada because Canada's awesome and they're nice and they like to share.
It was just nice, like you say, kind of untethering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just so used to either Marvel being very New York heavy or DC being fake city heavy.
No, I'm big into the big world stuff. Like, I like when they... When they take they go out a bit more.
You like your Guardians of the Globe?
Mm-hmm. I do. I like the Guardians of the Globe.
But anyways, I just wanted to give another heavy shout out. Really enjoyed those first issues of Copperhead, which I believe is in trade. And I'm probably going to do the same with Secret Identities. Actually, I bought
the second issue is great. Yeah, floppies. It's worth it for these.
So I might do the same with this. But even though I am mostly moving to trade, I might floppy this one out, too.
But they go to the ROM, guys. The ROM.
What do you mean?
Royal Ontario Museum.
Oh, I must have blocked that part out.
Even in comics, Phil doesn't have time for museums.
No, I think so.
He hasn't got time for the pain.
I like some museums.
I dig museums.
Well, a giant crystal that's sort of embedded in your city, you kind of take notice of stuff like that.
Like, we have a cool museum with, like, live bugs in it and stuff. It's kind of cool.
Oh, I don't like that. I don't like bugs. Good Lord. I don't need that kind of static. I like arty stuff and sciencey stuff. You know, and museum
stuff.
All right, Super Steve, what have you been checking out? We got to wake him up. Someone wake up Steve.
Huh? Who? Huh? I've got The Edge of Doom. Join me as I take you to The Edge of Doom. From IDW, it's 5 issues long. It was 2010, 2011-ish.
Well, you talked about the first issue one time.
I did.
Yeah.
Because it was free on Comixology.
Yeah.
And they sucked me in.
And I love this series, Edge of Doom.
I wanted to check out the rest of them, and I did, and they were great. And now I'm reporting back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is written by Steve Niles, the five issues, with art by Kelly Jones. And it's like a horror anthology, or so it seems. And like I said, I talked about that first issue where the guy mm-hmm. gets pulled into the hole in his yard, and he encounters these little devil creatures, and then he blows them all up after a crazy escape.
Mm-hmm.
And issue two was my favorite of the bunch. It's like an EC-era sci-fi tale. There's an astronaut who is left behind on a planet that his crew is exploring. He's like getting some samples, and all of a sudden he gets a radio message. We've accidentally started the liftoff sequence. We're going to take off in 6 minutes. How far out are you? He's like, 8 minutes. They're like, run. He's like, run. And they're like, we'll leave as many supplies as we can. And he, as he gets in within range to see them, he sees them take off, and there they go. And he's freaking stuck there.
And that's a freaky thought, just stuck in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Nothing you could do.
He hopes that they're coming back and that they're sending help. He rigs this little weather health bot, artificial intelligence, to be his little, robo-pal sidekick that he can talk to so he doesn't go crazy. And years later, he discovers in a crater the remnants of the ship that took off. It never made it out of the atmosphere, and they crashed and died. He's the only one alive. No help is coming. No, they're not coming back. And then the battery goes out on his little dude. And mm-hmm. then after that, there's a crazy classic O. Henry type ending twist. That isn't even the twist. You think it is. There's mm-hmm. even another twist at the end. That really tight, really good issue. Number three goes back to horror full on. There's this couple that's driving and they're arguing. They've decided to get a divorce, and then they get attacked, and there's rogue doctors put them on this surgery freak show where they can reanimate tissue, and they cut the guy's intestines out and turn it into this monster and then poke at it with sticks. And before they can start operating on the wife, the husband guy, dying there on the table, grabs the serum that they injected him with it and throws it to his wife, and she sticks it in her heart and injects the whole thing in and turns to this big monster. And totally mops the floor with all the doctors and all the people watching and everything. And she gives birth during it to her a fetus. And then the baby, the little infant, is running around biting guys on the head and killing people and choking them with his umbilical and stuff.
It's fucked.
It's totally, totally crazy.
Steve, you the crazy comics.
But, it cements their revenge for sure. Number four is another cliche, but still cool story.
I think it was my least favorite, though, out of the bunch.
It's pretty cliche.
But it's good, though.
Still. Undercover cop is being offed in the swamp in a way that he offed a bunch of guys with the mobsters that are now offing him. And it goes all swamp thing, man thingy when he goes under the water and then comes back as a monster and gets revenge on them, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of three and four, they're these weird little vague captionless, dialogue-less closing sequences featuring vehicles with this nuclear symbol on the side. And you don't really know what the deal is. Nuclear, not nuclear. and you don't really know what the deal is until issue number five. And in issue five, the last issue, there's a crazy twist. The four surviving protagonists and the baby of the previous four issues are brought together by this retired special ops general and sent on a mission to take down these zombie rogue soldiers that they accidentally created and that took over this small nation. it's really
never
quite
expected
cool.
That.
It's all these done in ones. And then the big twist ending ish where they all come together and become this crazy fighting force. Mm-hmm. Dude, this is crazy comics and drawn by Kelly Jones. Really good.
Yeah. Really worth picking up the trade.
And check out the first issue for free on Comixology. It's really worthwhile. Kelly Jones is channeling his Bernie Wrightson at times really nicely.
For me, I always thought of it kind of like the Twilight Zone. For me, that's what the feel
sure.
I got from it.
Absolutely. Kevin.
You know what isn't like the Twilight Zone?
Manga.
Uh-oh.
Pulp hats. I do not know. I don't know why it's called that. I guess I should have checked that out. Because that really doesn't describe anything what this is about.
Yet it's all you've let us in on.
Well, it says on the back cover of issue 2 here, it says, special jumbo-sized issue, 40 pages of sweetness and light, plus hell. Impulse purchase recommended. Regret it later. But you won't regret it. It's from Ad House Books by Ethan Riley. Very clean art style, and it's about a law clerk. I'm getting into all genres now. Just like last time with Master Keaton, I'm getting into all the legal weird stuff, I guess. Uh-oh. Which is weird in a way because I don't watch like legal dramas or courtroom dramas, well, rarely on TV. I don't know, so. Something about a comic, though. Legal drama, I'm like, I'm cool with that. Video games, yeah, sure. Legal drama, whatever.
Cause I object. And throw in little Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney.
Exactly. There's something different going on. Like, I guess you could shoot a TV show a different way, but like comics, it's, you know, it's visual. Like, people are always going to look like people, but you can draw things different TV's ways. And sometimes visual. They're pleasing to the eye, and you go, this is interesting just because I'm looking at it. This is on a page. So, yeah, it follows, like, a couple, like, these two people that live in an apartment here, and one of them's trying to become, a famous actress in Hollywood, and, like, one of them is, like, a law clerk, and then they go to work, and they deal with these horrible things at work. And I find out about legal stuff, and I'm going, oh, this is kind of cool. And then you go, oh, that's kind of depressing. And they sort of, like, they don't really complain about anything. And it seems like they can always, they know the right thing to say. And things seem to work out for them, and they get promoted and stuff. And other people are, like, envious and everything. And they're like, oh, man, you got, like, the perfect thing going on. You're going to, like, end up with a corner office, and you're getting in good with the partners of the firm and all that stuff. But I almost feel like the main character is going to, like, freak out at some point and go, is this what I should be doing with my life? Like, maybe there's something better they should be doing? They have sleeping troubles and stuff like that. And meanwhile, their friends, since they're, like trying to become the famous actress and everything, they're, like, more, like, partying and drinking and all that type of stuff, and they're like living the life type of thing. Maybe that a law clerk would like to live. So, like, there's other stories in these Popad issues. Like, there's issues 2 and 3 and 4. I think is coming out. Is it June? Soon, anyways, within a few months. So, yeah, there's other stories in here, but like the legal story takes up like I'd say 90% of the book. There's like maybe one or two backup stories in here too about it seems like unrelated stuff. But really dig the legal stuff. Something about this legalese. Never thought I would say that, but good stuff. But Ad House, you know, can't go wrong.
Phil.
Yes. Well, I read recently from Image Comics, first issue, Red One, by Xavier Dorison, Terry Dodson, and Rachel Dodson.
How was that? I wanted to check that out.
Oh, same well, here. Yeah, I remember all it that. Was, the cover looked great.
I'm sure as no surprise, the art was beautiful. The color was beautiful. And the inking was beautiful. And the thing I liked about this is there's no action in it at all. And it's a very heavy worded story, and I didn't get bored at all. Like, it's great character development. It's basically about a Russian spy who goes undercover in America. And there's superheroes in this world. Basically, there's a superhero going around murdering people. Or I guess like not a superhero, but like a villain. And she's going undercover and as a superhero in America. They haven't really set up too much of that yet, but it's mostly her just doing some training and going to America and a bit of her undercover life. But the characters are very easy to grab onto. I enjoyed all the characters. Like I say, the art is good. I usually always enjoy their art, though, I find.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, definitely, if you were wondering about it, definitely pick it up.
Well, since I finished the first season of the TV series, The Americans, you know, that sort of...
Is that what kind taps, of...
That sort of taps into my spy, you know, other...
Well, this doesn't really feel like a spy comic, though. Like, it's not like that, really. Like, it's more her goofing around, almost. Because I'm not big into the spy stuff, really.
You think it'll get serious?
Well, it is serious. It's just she's a bit of a... Like, she has a very flirtatious and dangerous type of attitude, almost. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, is it like a confidence where she's, like, kind of dancing through the story, like, encountering danger, but her confidence...
Exactly, know, yeah.
Gets her through it in ways where you'd be like, what?
Well, there hasn't been really any danger yet. Because like okay. I say, there's no action at all, like, so far.
Hmm.
Except for a murder scene, which doesn't involve her at all. It's where, like, the villain murders somebody. Dun, dun,
dun. Not yet.
Cool. Andrew.
Well, I don't know. We've been weighing this. Is it time? Is it time to dig into... The book, the big book, the Transformers G.I. Joe.
Oh,
are
no,
we
you're
emotionally
so
ready for this? Kevin, are you ready?
I got all four issues here. I almost took a five, but I figured that you don't have that one.
I have the trade, which is like the zero. And I mean, we talked about, I think we've at least talked about the comic book day zero.
Yeah.
I think
we
might have talked about the first issue. But let me tell you, around about issue three. Well, anyways, let's wind this back. This is the IDW presents Transformers versus G.I. Joe, Tom's and John Barber. Tom, what are we saying this is? Sholey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sholey. I believe that's his name.
Okay. We've talked a lot. As we said, we mentioned sort of the kind of immediacy of it. And the first two issues were a lot of, they just throw you into the action. And it's this crazy mashup of these two characters. And there's a lot of back matter about how they've really spent time kind of looking at the toys and reading the comics and watching the show to capture that world.
And it's like everything about comics, though, like, and about 80s comics. And it's like there was, like, maps and cutaways of headquarters and lots of arrows and captions and things labeling other parts. And it was just so many... I don't know, it just felt like a love letter to that type of, again, I'll use the word kind of cliched storytelling, but then actually the storytelling itself isn't cliched at all. It's like this crazy story.
Yeah. And it's very, you know, it communicates everything, even though the immediacy of it, you know, you get what's going on, and they're pulling in super obscure characters. Ones that I like, I'm no expert at this stuff, but I remember the cartoon and the toys. And they're pulling in stuff. The October Guard, which is this the Cobra bad guys who look like out of some Halloween thing. And then all the G.I. Joe pets also were their own super team.
The what?
And I don't remember that super team at all. You don't remember where they send the all the animals, the G.I. Joe animals, and they're all wearing weapons?
Awesome.
Against the October Guard.
See, we started at some point, it started getting really, really, I guess it's dense. It's weird because there's so many splash pages and big panels, or some pages don't even have words on it. So you would think, oh, I'm just going to blow through this.
No way.
But it's like, no way. There's like some kind of crazy... like comic density being practiced here where it takes an extremely long time to get through this. Cause I'm just like, wait, where is everyone? What's happening? Like, I know the general idea. Okay. Like there's some things are going on Earth and some things are going on Cybertron and G.I. Joe's there trying to sabotage. But then you get the stuff like the pets and like some kind of weird cosmic mumbo jumbo and then Cobra Commander's dead and Snake Guys is a bad guy and I'm just going, what happened? At what point did I lose like the thread of what was like for the fine details? I'm like, what?
It's like so indie, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, oh my God. I read this thing like 2.5 times and I still my favorite part has to be okay that it's split. There's a force on Earth and a force on Cybertron where the Autobots are from. And the Force on Cybertron, they used a Cobra weapon, which is this like crazy weed that takes over. It's like a bomb. You drop it and it just grows like crazy. And there's a part where after a battle and both sides have knocked each other out, one of the G.I. Joes eats one of the leaves and starts basically having psychedelic visions.
So crazy. It's awesome.
And I'm like, wait, who is this for? Like, is this, like, I can't believe the psychedelic. Well, my favorite is also the, he references like a song from 10 years before, Doctor My Eyes from the 70s. And it's like this mashup of different pop culture relevancies. And then one of the more simplistic Autobots, Grimlock, who's the dinosaur style, he speaks in his own kind of simple text, and there's a page of that. And this just goes from, yeah, I mean, how do you describe this thing? Like Kevin says, what exactly happened? And on some level, you can explain what happened. On another level, you can't really explain what happened.
When the storytelling of things to actually read and in sequence are not dense, like you said, with the big splash pages and stuff, the art is really dense, so it keeps you there's no place to skim, and it's so hard to read consecutive issues. Like by the time I'm done reading an issue, it's like, wow, I just had like a real thorough comic book experience there.
Like, I'm not sure if maybe if you were more like, if you knew everything there was to know about like Transformers, you might be able to like figure out a little bit more what was happening.
I don't know. I can't imagine in Transformers anybody's eating weird grass.
I'm just enjoying the sequences as they happen and not worrying about trying to grasp hold of some long ranging narrative.
Like, maybe if you knew all this like obscure stuff, you'd be like, oh yeah, Cyclonus. You know, he's an emotionless air warrior, and I remember in that issue, on that one episode, on that one thing in the background, when he did that thing, like, I don't know, like, I have a basic understanding, and I've seen some of the early Transformers stuff, but really, like, Beasties, or Beast Wars, as the Americans call it, that's really where my entry point was, so I'm just like, what? And then, like, some of these characters just say hilarious things, like, they're like, go suck a tailpipe, Robo Sleaze.
I mean, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
I was gonna say, when I pick up the next issue, I'm not worried about what happened before, remembering what happened before. I'm just like, what are they gonna do now?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Hasbro and IDW certainly deserve a lot of credit. Like, I never thought I'd be this excited about a licensed comic. You know, especially two basically blatant cash grab products that were. You know, those cartoons were basically half-hour commercials for the toys, you know? And and yet, this thing is on, you can take it at any level. You know, you could just read it. You could probably give it to some young person just to read and have a lot of the stuff kind of wash over them. Or you can spend just a ton of time burying yourself in. And I really like that they give some pretty extensive back matter about, and you can tell, and I think it translates in the feel, too. I mean, maybe I'm fooling myself, but it feels like they really researched these characters, so even though you may not know who they are, they feel like they have a place and they're following their place in the world.
Definitely. They like their whole file dossier aspect of the original Joes. And
yeah. You know, all right, gentlemen. Maybe there is more than meets the eye here. Hmm? Eh? No, people said like that Image Comics series Prophet was like confusing or something. I'm like, that makes sense compared to this series. This is much more confusing than Prophet ever was.
But yeah, and so it's gonna have the art style you would expect of Trolley. And I gotta say, I really I mean, it doesn't match my love of Godland. Probably for his top, but it's coming pretty close, I gotta say. And I really think that, I don't know, he just finds that right mix between kind of the soft edges, but yet having everything still recognizable. Like, my limited knowledge is the ones I recognize. Like, I know Scarlet and Soundwave and some of the early guys. Like, I don't know the October Guard, but I remember Roadblock and Flint and those dudes, and so I can see them and, oh yeah, that's who that is, or the Transformers. But he's not, you know, this isn't going to be an overly rendered version of it either.
Well, you know who the GoBots are.
Yes, I had a little GoBot guy. But yeah, the Shark, I didn't remember the Sharktacons. I guess they're from the movie or something. I don't, there's a lot here. If you're into those toys, I think you'd be pretty pleased with all the deep cuts. I am not super into them, but I enjoyed seeing some of these things. But like as Steve says, it's just a strange ride that I can't imagine. Like, what are the dudes at Hasbro when they get this stuff? Like, do they know what's going on? Can someone explain it to me?
Well, they did censor the one thing when the guy's head gets like fried. And I'm like, that seems like the only thing they're like, yeah, you can't do that. But anything else, be like the most indie licensed comic you can possibly be.
It really is.
Have the guy eat some magical leaves and see the true nature of the world. But anyways, that's one for me that I was like, wait, what am I reading now? Is he really? And then there's fun, like, they slip alternate covers in here. Like, the you get to see the ones, at least in the collected version. So Riley Rossmo did one, and Rob Liefeld, you can see his exciting take, and James Stokoe does a pretty menacing Megatron, I gotta say.
Yeah.
It would be fun to see him do, like, a little guest spot or whatever. His artwork lends itself to that kind of chaotic madness. But anyways, that's the G.I. Joe Transformers.
On the other side of the same genre in some ways, I reread from Top Shelf Jeffrey Brown's Incredible Change Bots volume 1 and 2, and then read for the first time the more recently released the 2.something-something that came out more recently. And Incredible Change Bots is, it's like, it's a little pocket-sized book. It's actually drawn on 4x6 paper in color and magic marker, and it's got all the tropes of the Transformers. It, like, their home planet is Electrono Cyber Circuitron, you know, and so it really fits in line with the same feeling in some ways that indie attack on something that's so mainstream and marketed and everything, like we were just doing with the Transformers and G.I. Joes. Of course, it is a spoof on the Transformers and toys in general at times. Funny as heck situations. Sometimes it's just the dialogue that's so funny because it's coming from these characters, these bots, the way that Jeffrey Brown draws them. There's funny cliches, like this one character, Arsenal, gets blown up, and then a human mechanic works on him, and then he comes back and announces himself as battle-damaged Arsenal, you know, and then gets blown up again, and then it becomes like a repeating joke kind of thing. Actually, I enjoyed rereading this stuff so much and enjoyed reading it with my kiddo that I just bought 2 pages from it.
Wow.
And they actually relate to Arsenal getting blown up and being, when he comes back and announces that he's the battle-damaged Arsenal. But really well-crafted stuff. It looks really good on the iPad, too, because on the iPad it's actually blown up. It's bigger than it is in print. The third book is all full of pinups that he did for his fan club and short stories that appeared elsewhere and strips and stuff, but really fun. Again, kind of, I would say good for all ages, but the younger side of things would really kind of take it at face value, whereas, again, my kiddo's about 10, and he could get the jokes that after, you know, a big victory, one of the guys stands up and points his gun to the air, and just the caption at the bottom reads, like, you got the touch, you know, like the old Transformers movie. And there's just little lines here and there that make you just crack up as they realize things, as they're shooting their lasers, and the humans have figured out that they can use mirrors to block the lasers, and they're like, this is, like, totally useless. They're two robots fighting from the trench, shooting the lasers, and the one guy looks at the other and he says, you know, what if we like went out there and just started punching these guys? And the guy looks at the other guy and he's like, yeah, let's do it. And then the next panel just shows them out there like tearing the hell out of all these human soldiers and stuff because they realize we could just freaking punch these guys. And it's the Awesome Bots versus the Fantasticons, and it's really funny. You if you've never checked it out, you really should. And its goofiness, but at the same time, it's really well-crafted indie art. When you see the magic marker detail and the shading and the forms in motion as he draws them, it's really kooky, and I actually like it better than the Transformers, I would say.
Where's my Comic-Con sex bots?
I think Phil should review Chester 5000 or something.
Yeah, and there's a scene. There's a scene in the change bots.
You know what movie I loved? Cherry 3000. You remember that one?
I do.
Melanie Griffith. I love that.
That one? Yeah, yeah. That was on HBO a lot. That's not as... wasn't it only like PG-13? It's not like super... It doesn't have
no,
a lot.
No, there's no nudity. There's no nudity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty tame. I remember that one. I also remember the Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. It was one of the first 3D movies.
I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my dad took me to the theater and he put on the goofy, back then they were like paper glasses with the two colors.
Well, I saw the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I love those two.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was 3D as well.
He's my favorite of the Universal Monsters. Kevin, give us one
more. Okay, if I told you there was a series with Simon Roy, Ed Brisson, Michael Walsh, Johnny Christmas, and amongst other people, what series do you think this would be?
Archie.
No, this is far from Archie. No, there was a series that came out and is now collected at Dark Horse, but I have the individual issues, and I think there's more stuff, like original stories, that I don't have in the new collection, but it's a murder book. And it's pretty much what you think, like a lot of hard crime stories about people getting murdered and everything like that.
Simon Roy, that's what was his like beginning thing, wasn't it? Like his
this is pretty early on in a lot of these guys' careers. So it's kind of interesting to see that, and then to see like the twist or the like. There's two stories per issue in the ones I have, so it's like maybe 10-12 pages, and then like two guys are meeting up in a bar or something, and you're like, oh, how is this going to go down badly? What interesting crime stories about how someone's going to eventually get murdered, pretty much.
Phil, one more.
One more, okay. I could do a quick one more. Well, recently I talked about Spawn, I don't know what number it was.
250?
250, probably, yeah, 250. Well, recently the issue after that came out, which was a one-shot Spawn Resurrection with the new team on it. So I figured I'd talk about this one and then the next issue that comes out of the series. But I think that's all I'll be reading after this issue. The new team is Paul Jenkins, and then I don't know if this is another stupid name or not, but John Boy. That's it. And basically what it is it's Al Simmons, and it now God is a dog, and it kind of just runs through his life, which is very boring. It skips over all the Image United stuff, so none of that happened. And then it basically kind of sets it up for the next issue, which is this is a big spoiler, so if you don't want to listen, shut off the podcast for a tiny second.
Where's my mute?
But I don't care. I'm spoiling it because it's stupid.
Oh.
So in this comic, they kill Wanda. So now there's... Which I kind of like because now kind of get... So it doesn't fall back on that crap, because this is a new team. Let's kind of do something a little different. But the problem is, it looks like they're making him into a superhero.
Nope. Time to bring back Angela.
Which, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But it won't... really work, because the way he looks, like he has demon teeth, like this crazy sword. Like he's evil looking, you know? So I don't know. And it seems like he's going to be fighting humans, or I don't know. Like, I won't really know till next issue, I guess. But like I said, I'm going to try one more issue. But if they make him a full-on superhero, I'm definitely not reading it.
With those teeth and fighting humans, and he's going to be a superhero?
Yeah, it's just what... Like, I don't know for sure, but...
Okay. He'll protect God, the world that fears God and gave doesn't him, understand him.
God gave him this big, evil-looking sword to go protect humans. So, like, he's on a mission to... go protect humans so he can see his daughter and wife again in hell or something like that.
Okay. Good luck to you. Good luck to you, Al. Will he ever win?
What's winning, Steve? What's really winning?
Winning is Andrew bringing us home with one last book.
All right.
That's what, man, you boys have a strange definition of winning, if that's the case. Winning.
What's winning for Andrew is a bathroom getting finished.
Yeah, don't even start. Okay, did I talk about technically Magi or Hex 11?
Hex 11.
Okay. Hex 11, Lisa K. Weber, Kelly Sue Milano. I picked this up at my last convention appearance, so it's signed by the creative teams, and I also have a chance to, I have an upcoming, WonderCon is coming up, for those of you in the SoCal area. It's in Anaheim, right next to lovely Disneyland, and I will be attending that show, along with Star Wars Celebration, which is 2 weeks after that, also in Anaheim, celebrating Star Wars. Then I will be appearing at C2E2 at the end of the month. Then so I'm taking a break from conventions for a while.
So if we have some late episodes, everyone will know why.
Yeah, no shit.
You promised us you were going to go to FurryCon this year.
If I get a chance to, last year...
No, you got
to
go.
If it conflicts with another convention, I can't, like, they need to book it on...
You went out of your way to go to a Hello Kitty con.
Yeah, but that was a once-in-a-lifetime. They don't have another
one. Oh, my God.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime.
You just said those words.
Where Califers every year. They're on, like, their 13th or 14th. But anyways, Hex 11 is a world where there's, like, magic and non-magic. And, like, magic's kind of... so. And there's kind of, like, haves and have-nots of the magic world. And so it's buried into that. A lot of what attracted my attention was... I like that it was called Hex because it reminded me of the Boom series Hex. But it's sort of, a lot of the kids nowadays, I'm going to say, have a bit of an anime influence. It doesn't really bother me because it's not like just the big round eyes and fan service that Kevin loves. But it does have some of the, you know, how the kind of figure work that they sort of do. So some of that's in there, but that doesn't really bother me, but I do want to warn people that that's the thing. The other thing I always think is weird is they do that, and this isn't just anime manga influence, but that bit where they color the noses, I always think that's odd. You guys know what I mean, right?
Yeah, pick up the nose.
Yeah, yeah, and I always think that's, like, it's not like that's exclude, like, tons of people do it, but I don't know, it always seems weird. I guess I grew up with
guilt
pain.
You mean like in Tay-Tay? Like when...
No, like in Captain America or something.
You know...
Like J. Scott Campbell does the red nose tips, yeah, yeah, like on the girls, and like Joe Chiodo. It's often a way to, you know, suggest that there's some heat on a face, you know? There's some blood flowing through it.
I also thought maybe it helps give depth a little bit.
Sure.
But I don't know. For some reason, it never... It's the one thing that I don't... I got to get over it, but it's that one thing that's always like, oh, I don't know. It just doesn't look like a face to me. I mean, sometimes it works better than others, but I don't know. I don't mind the color in the cheeks, but for some reason the color nose, like, I guess if you're an alky, you have a big red nose. But
you don't. But anyways. Do you have a cold?
Yeah, everyone in the book. So it's a fun, I did enjoy the first issue. I'm not sure, like, I thought it was a fair mix of action and exposition. The one thing I'm less on, but a lot of books, it's kind of the big glossy pages that are very popular now. And I know we've all been grooving on kind of older paper lately. But that's not really a fault. No one really uses that older paper much anymore, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Which, what, is kind
of management
shit.
Uses that awesome paper?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm not knocking. Image will use it too.
You know, yeah, Kablam.
It depends. Because I don't think you're really saving any. Like, it's not. Like, I guess some people thought, like, oh, it's a savings thing. But it's. Sometimes you get to pick out, like, what kind of paper you want in the series nowadays. So it's not really. Yeah.
But this one, it's like, there's no ads. It's a full story. You know, and it, unlike the normal, it's got their website on the back. It doesn't even have Kablam or whatever you normally see on these things. But it's this was from September 2014. It's the first issue. I think if I see him at the next one, I'm pretty sure the next one, yeah, the next one's already out. So I'll probably pick that one up. And it's just kind of a fun, exciting, magic-y world to sink yourself into. I know this wasn't the most dynamic sale, and I got routed onto colored noses, but you guys know me. I have a hard time paying attention to things. That's why I like comic books. They're short. They're for the easily amused.
And let's keep this short and wrap things up here for... That can be our 30th episode, guys. Our 30th episode together.
Woohoo! Or 358th if we're stealing
and,
the other episodes.
And we're going weekly, right? Right?
We'll try as often as we can. Marvel Noise is the one with the hard bi-weekly deadline. And we'll fit the show in around it as best we can. You can find us all on Twitter, even the show, Indie Comic Book N. We got a Facebook page with all our Twitter addresses in the heading section and stuff. Come on by, give us a like, shout us a tweet about what you've been reading. Consider leaving us an iTunes review, too. And thanks to those that have. And listen to us over on Marvel Noise, where we talk about the Marvel books.
In a all-ages-friendly manner.
All right, gang, until next time, why don't you ride out the lingering winter in style? Read some indie comics. Later.
Outside the door.